again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 201. This is the weekly podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community as we discover and discuss the vital topics of saving our domestic flower farms and supporting a floral industry that relies on a safe, seasonal, and local supply of flowers and foliage. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free, nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And a special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2015, the California Cut Flower Commission, committed to making a difference as an advocate for American-grown flowers. Learn more at ccfc.org. American Flowers Week wrapped up on July 4th with a fantastic level of involvement from flower farmers and floral designers all over the country, from boutique growers to the largest flower farms in the country, from studio florists to grocery stores and wholesalers too. We celebrated American Flowers Week as a grassroots education, promotion, and advocacy campaign to highlight our nation's flowers and foliage, and to raise awareness among consumers, the media, and policymakers about supporting domestic flowers. On Twitter and Instagram alone, mentions of American Flowers Week generated more than 400,000 impressions in 1 month. That's pretty exciting for what was a mere idea 6 weeks ago. Huge thanks to our top participants. Without their intentional involvement and embrace of American Flowers Week, we could never have created so much beautiful buzz about this grassroots campaign. Top post honors go to Farm Girl Flowers of San Francisco and Los Angeles for generating more than 3,500 likes on Instagram with a special firecracker bouquet promotion designed just for American Flowers Week. You rocked it, Farm Girl team. Others whose posts generated lots of engagement include Bear Mountain Farm, a boutique flower farm in Oregon's Willamette Valley, with a dazzling photo of peachy trumpet snapdragons, Verbena Flowers and Trimmings of Roseville, California. Mom Karen Plarizin and daughter Carly Saar posted a charming American Flowers Week bouquet that they grew and designed with the Support Your Local Farmer message. And Bethany Coughland of Clarice in Sonoma County. She posted a romantic bouquet that wowed with the American Flowers Week message. April Limley of Portland's Kamama Flowers was our most frequent participant, followed closely by Sarah and Steve Peabody of Triple Wren Farms of Linden, Washington. Altogether, the metrics are so impressive. Check out more stats in today's show notes at deborahprinzing.com. One more announcement before I introduce today's guest. Next week, I'm heading to Boulder, Colorado to co-host the fourth Field to Vase Dinner at the Fresh Herb Company. Owned by Chet and Christy Anderson, past guests of this podcast, the Flower Farm will be transformed into an amazing venue for more than 100 diners who want to celebrate local flowers and local food in a gorgeous setting. How cool is that? The event takes place on Saturday, July 18th. Food and Wine magazine called the Field to Vase Dinners summer's ultimate alfresco dinner party. And the Wall Street Journal dubbed the dinner tours a feast among the flora. You won't want to miss it. Supporters of Slow Flowers can take advantage of a special promotional discount to reserve their seats. So visit my show notes at deborahprinzing.com to find that code and save $35 off the dinner at the Fresh Herb Company. Or at future Field to Vase dinners in Brooklyn, Portland, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Detroit, or San Diego. I'm so pleased today to introduce you to Tammy Myers of First and Bloom, a floral design studio based in Seattle, specifically operating in the east side suburbs of Issaquah, Redmond, Bellevue, Fall City, and beyond. The very first thing you read on First and Bloom's website is this message, "From America with Love, love just a little more by supporting your local farmers." Tammy goes on to write, "We're different by design. We know your love of locally grown food and organic food. Now, surround yourself with gorgeous locally grown flowers from yours truly, the American Farmer." She continues, "First and Bloom only buys local and sustainable flowers. But what does that really mean? Simply put, I only sell flowers grown in the United States. Absolutely zero flowers are grown outside the U.S. Some florists will say they use local flowers whenever possible. This means they rely on international growers occasionally. Likely it's during peak holiday seasons and when special requests have been made out of season. I'm upfront with this about customers, especially brides. If it's not in season or not available from California, it's unfortunately not an option. Another distinction of First in Bloom is the refusal to use a floral industry staple, floral foam. You know, that spongy green brick your stems are stuck into deep inside your vase? It's completely 100% toxic, primarily formaldehyde-based. It's only used once, then tossed into a landfill. It's a floral marble and makes a florist's job easier, but not at the cost of our environment or physical well-being. Tammy's is a young, emerging floral business. Her story of getting First in Bloom established will inspire others new to the profession, those who are also shaping a business philosophy that distinguishes and differentiates in the crowded and confusing floral marketplace. She's still on this journey, and it will be fascinating to watch her along the way. Please enjoy our conversation and follow along at Tammy's social places. I'll provide those links in our show notes. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, and I'm sitting outdoors in a very noisy area of Georgetown, Seattle, with my guest, Tammy Myers. Hi, Tammy.
Hi.
We're going to have to speak up so we can be louder than the... yeah, okay. Exactly. Trains, planes, and automobiles. We are actually at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, where Tammy is a frequent customer, and I'm on the board, and we run into each other a lot. And so I invited her to be on this podcast. We thought we'd sit outside in the shade, but there's so much air traffic ahead overhead that you'll hear a lot of airplanes, which is the ambiance, right? So, Tammy, you own First in Bloom. And can you describe your business and where it's located and you know, what your scope of work is?
Yes. So my I own a small florist shop in the Issaquah area, and it is called First in Bloom, like you mentioned. It's been around for about a year and a half. And
it's a cute name.
Thank you. To me, I envision a cross street where you see First in Bloom.
Yeah, and you're on the corner.
And I'm on the corner.
I love it.
I specialize in local and sustainable flowers only. I even do that in the winter months when local flowers are limited in the area. I will source from California and other parts of the country, but I am absolutely strict about not purchasing anything international at all. I also consider myself to be a green florist, which means that I do not use the toxic floral foam that is used by the majority of florists out there.
Yeah.
And I really can't wait to get my hands on the floral soil, which is hopefully coming out on the market soon.
Yeah, that's true.
My style, I think, is probably very, it's very loose and creative and very country and whimsical. Nothing is too constructed or what I would view a contemporary style.
Mm-hmm. And like a real spare style or whatever.
Yes, yeah. Or very, you know, lateral or, you know, it's actually hard for me to design that way. And I get nervous and I get anxiety when I have to do it that way. And it's taken me a long time, but I realized, you know what, that's just not your style.
Right.
And so I just let the flowers speak for themselves. Mm-hmm. And wherever they need to be positioned and placed, that's where they go.
Ooh, I like that description.
Yeah.
So how did you come to start First in Bloom about a year and a half ago? What were you doing before that?
Well, before that, believe it or not, I started my professional career as a teacher 10 plus years ago, and I was an elementary teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that that wasn't the profession for me, and so I thought, okay, well, I must, you know, the next best thing is to go into corporate America. And so eventually I moved myself into working with a online travel company that's local in the area, and I worked there for about 5 years. But then I had a son, and, you know, I really felt like there was something more for me and something that would allow me to be creative.
Right.
But I didn't know exactly what that was. And so when I was in college, I relied on being a florist. I got a job in college part-time, and you know, it was just a job, right? It was just to make some money, right. And I learned some things. But
where was that?
It was in the Spokane, mm-hmm. Spokane, Washington area, and it actually was at the Fairchild Air Force Base.
Oh my goodness!
And they have a little tiny flower shop in the commissary, and the gals loved me, and they hired me not because I was, you know, knew how to do flowers, but because they liked my personality, and they knew they could work with me. So I was like, okay.
And you were like in your early 20s.
Oh, I was like, yeah, I was 20.
Yeah, I love
it. I was very young and, you know, thought I knew everything in the world when I probably didn't know all that much.
But how funny you feel. You're like, I went to college, I was a teacher, I worked in corporate America, and now I'm back scrubbing buckets.
Exactly, exactly.
The glamour of floral.
Exactly. But then when I... there was a brief period from when I made the transition from being a teacher to corporate America that I was without a job. And so I needed to rely on something. And I actually thought, okay, maybe I do want to open up a floral business. And I went to work at a store in Bellevue called Lawrence the Florist. And they've been around for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
A fantastic family. And I only worked there for about 5 months.
So like a real establishment.
Oh, I was a full-time florist.
Wow.
And that's where I really, you know, learned what being a florist
the was. Gritty part and yes. All the techniques.
Yes, it is manual labor. And my hands were green and they were calloused and ugly. And I'm like, I don't like this. So I went and found these scrubbing pad things that like made my hands soft again. And but I really remembered so much from that 5 months. But what I struggled with was that there was really high overhead mm-hmm. in having a business like that. And I could see that. I could see the stress levels, you know, up and down during different periods of, you know, seasonality. And
so overhead being like rent and the vehicles and employees.
Yeah, all of the inventory and merchandising that goes into having a florist business that is virtually not bringing in revenue.
Right.
And that is very, very expensive to hold on to. And so I put that on the back burner and I, you know, focused on my professional career, and I put all my energy into that. You know, I got married and I had a kid. And then when I left work, you know, I was lost for a long time, and it was a bit of a soul searching mm-hmm. experience for me.
Had you been laid off or
no?
Because I know that company that you're talking about, and I knew that they had a couple layoffs during the economy.
No, I willingly left, and it was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do because I, you know, I really loved the people mm-hmm. and the company, mm-hmm. But it was just. It wasn't about them.
Yeah,
it was about something about me
yeah.
that needed to change.
Yeah, you were just looking at a computer screen sitting at a desk.
Yes,
full time.
I was a number, and I had to fill, you know, a certain quota that exists within the corporate America, and you know, it kind of eats at you
yeah.
over time. And
I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah, I wanted something more.
Mm-hmm.
So
was it like 2 or 3 years ago?
That was 2 years ago this month.
Wow.
2 years ago this month, yeah.
Wow.
And so after that, then I decided, maybe I'll go to school. So I'm like, do I really want to get my MBA or, you know, what do I want to do here? And then I found out that University of Washington offered certification programs. And I knew that I wanted to be in marketing. And so I decided to take a class. And it wasn't a huge commitment. And it was, you know, one day a week, but it did end up turning out to be a lot of work because we had...
Was it like a semester long or something?
Well, it was a whole year.
Oh,
so
oh,
the
wow.
certification is 3 quarters worth.
Okay.
And and it was in marketing. I'm not sure if I mentioned that, but it was right before Christmas where I thought, I think I've got a few things figured out here, and I think I've got a way that I could make this work. Now, my ultimate goal is to someday be able to sell flowers during peak seasons and give 50%, I say that loosely, of the profits away to a nonprofit organization.
Wow.
Now, I know that means that I got to be...
highly productive.
I got to have a lot of income coming in. But that was where my vision came from, is that, you know, how could I combine making an income for myself, but also giving away and doing something that I love
wow.
at the same time.
Wow, that's really soulful.
it is, because, you know, that's what life should be about.
Yeah.
So I talked about it with my husband because, you know, he's always my go-to source for business questions. And I was shocked. He actually was like, I think this is a good idea. I think you should pursue this.
Wow.
And so from there, I
just kept developing your business
plan. Yeah, and I started researching, okay, who are my wholesalers in Seattle? And I mean, I had no idea. You know, 10 years ago, the wholesalers had completely changed from what I even remembered. And then I stumbled onto Seattle Wholesale Growers Market. And I came down here. The first time I came down here, they were closed. I didn't choose the right day. And then I walked in and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is beautiful.
You found your tribe.
Yeah.
I felt the same way. I know.
It was an aha moment for me. However, over the course of about 8 months, you know, I came up with my game plan, my business strategy, and what I really wanted to focus on was business accounts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, restaurants and local businesses that wanted to have flowers in their office. And I pursued that a little bit, but I was struggling with what was my niche. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while. And then, excuse me, in October or November of just this past year, I volunteered to donate some flowers to my son's school for Thanksgiving. And I went off and I went to a different wholesaler and I bought some flowers that were discounted. And again, I'm working out of my kitchen.
Right.
And, you know, I'm cutting up floral foam on the cutting board that I use for all of my food.
And talk about an aha moment.
And I noticed after, when I cleaned all of the flowers, I mean, I guess I'd known about this, but I just hadn't really clicked in my head. And there was something on my hands. And then something over top of that, like I must have done some research online and I was reading about, you know, international varieties and the types of chemicals that aren't used here in the States or have been banned in the States. And I thought, oh my gosh, not only am I using this in my kitchen on my cutting board with the knife that I cook, you know, cut my steak with, but I'm now going to go take that into my son's school and expose those children and anybody else in that facility with the same chemicals.
Yeah.
And so, I mean,
it was pretty symbolic.
It was instantaneous that I'm like, no, I'm done with this. And I knew in that moment, there's my niche.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, things picked up and, you know, I've tried to be involved and be aware. And ever since then, you know, I know ultimately that this, you know, was the best decision.
It's so great to hear this, that you had this moment of clarity. I feel like sometimes I'm talking to, I'm blue in the face, just to florists or just to the industry saying, this is a market distinction. This is a way to differentiate yourself from the whole cluttered, crowded universe of people trying to do floral design if you can be focused on sustainable practices. You'll stand out. And so few people kind of understand that. And I know it takes work. I mean, look at how much time you had to spend researching your sources, right?
Yeah.
But the story you just told is probably one that many people have done the same thing you have done and not made the connection. So you made the connection and now you have this niche that you can really, every decision you make is going to go through that lens,
yes,
right?
Yes. That's and if it cool. doesn't meet that quota or that standard, then it's not a part of it. And mm-hmm. I'm very upfront with that with my customers. I try to be. And that's a challenge that I have as a business owner is that I say local and sustainable, but even they don't understand really what local and sustainable might truly mean.
Right.
And
right.
But one thing that I can say as the business owner is that I'm committed to that criteria. And if it doesn't mean it, then it's not a part
yeah.
of my business.
That's interesting, Tammy, because it's so easy to kind of compromise and make small concessions, and I've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast with people who there is this sort of philosophy about, well, I never want to say no to a bride or I never want to disappoint a customer. And I think a lot of that just goes, and because you're a teacher, this is perfect. It's all about educating, right? Yeah. So you're able to maybe convey that information in a, and why you're making those decisions without making anyone feel guilty. And, you know, and also maybe helping enlighten them.
Yeah. an example of that actually appeared almost out of nowhere in February, and I had a business client who contacted me and wanted, you know, how much can you get for 1,500 red roses for Valentine's Day? And I mean, that is probably a florist dream, right?
Yeah, that's a volume order, right?
To fill an order like that. And I was, you know, instantaneously excited, and then at the same moment I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this because I made that commitment and I stuck to that commitment. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I passed up a huge order and I walked away from it. But, you know, when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I did. Yeah. And that was a hard example.
Well, and I'm already thinking, like, how could you have done that and, you know, worked the system? But Valentine's Day is the most difficult time to source roses because it's so competitive.
Yeah.
And you probably could have gotten, you couldn't have gotten any Oregon roses because Peter Court was recovering from their horrible greenhouse fire.
Yes.
I don't think they would have had 1,500 red roses to sell to one florist because they're trying to, in general, service all their florists. So they probably wouldn't have been able to do it. And then I guess you could have possibly sourced from California, but I don't know if, again, the quantities for one customer would have been there.
Yeah, I did speak with another wholesaler that heavily sources from California. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, he even said the same thing. He's like, I wish I had more of you.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, but there's just no way I'm going to be able to beat the price
of South America.
Of South America at this time of year. And he said that he couldn't even get flowers from the same farmer, you know, he has to
patch it together.
Yeah, he has to. And so at that, from that conversation, I just knew, you know, it is what it is. It's not the right time.
Yeah.
And I'll wait for another time.
So what is it, like, if you had a pie and you had the different slices of the pie, how would you describe the diversity of your customers right now?
Ooh, the diversity of my customers. Well, this year, the diversity, last year, it was heavily business and, or B2B accounts and daily order. I would say, no, not daily, holiday orders.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, relied heavily on friends and networking that
sure.
way.
Yeah.
But I did hit the pavement and mm-hmm. go to the local businesses and, you know, especially the restaurants. That's a, you know, it's a really great place to show, you know, your product.
Right.
But this year that flipped. And I would say it's been heavily on weddings. And again, I still have the business during the holidays with, you know, just, you know, one-off orders.
Sure.
And some with the restaurants. But I was surprised by the weddings. And it's because I've been able to network myself, not only from, you know, Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, but with other sites like, you know, offbeatbride.com.
Right.
And that really, really helped.
Wow.
Within that section,
wow.
you know, a piece of the pie.
Because you're, when you're on these other wedding sites, you're promoting yourself as a green wedding designer.
Yes.
Who's local and sustainable.
Yes. Another big thing that I did over the turn of the new year is I got a new website.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I needed to invest some money in my site, that, you know, a free website that you get on one of these site builders isn't going to cut it. And so I found somebody, again, I used my networking sources, and I found somebody who built a beautiful site. And he listened to me, and he heard what I wanted to, you know, what I, the message that I was trying to convey. And from there, it made it so much easier to express the vision that I had for my flowers, because people could go to my site immediately and know, oh, wow, this is something different.
Yeah.
And that really changed things.
And it really is beautiful. And we'll be sure to put links to First in Bloom's website on my show notes. And you have galleries of images on there. So that really
yes.
gives your customers a way to understand your style, too.
Yes.
And your message.
Yes, and I also incorporated early this spring, or late this spring, I should say, a blog that's on the site now. And over top of this, we moved out into the country, and which is really only 10 minutes away from Issaquah. It's not really country. And lovely jet.
Why are the smaller jets the noisier ones?
I don't know.
It's like the smaller dogs are always the noisier ones.
That's true.
We're by a big private landing field for people in corporate jets. They're probably all flying to the San Juans for July 4th.
That's so true.
So let's just, you mentioned Issaquah. Let's just explain to people that Issaquah is when I went to college in Seattle, it was the country. There was nothing out there. And it's probably, 20 miles east of Seattle?
Oh, no. I think it's maybe...
less?
I think it's 10.
Oh, my gosh.
10 or 12 miles. But
now it's huge, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a massive suburb. And, I mean, that's probably why we wanted to look a little bit further out is because it's booming out there.
Yeah.
But it's made up of the east side, what's called the east side of Seattle. It's on the other side of the pond of, Lake Washington. But First and Bloom also serves most everywhere on the east side. And so I'll go to Bellevue, I'll go to, parts of Renton and Newcastle,
right.
And Kirkland and
Redmond. I mean, there's a huge population base there.
A huge population.
Yeah, and tech money and new businesses. So it's a great place to be.
It is. And, there is a smaller population of florists on the east side, in particular Issaquah. And so, but there is a huge demand for, local sustainable produce and, meat products and everything out there along those lines.
Right.
So why wouldn't flowers fall right into that
right.
same category?
Right.
And they should.
Right. So your business is staying in Issaquah, but you don't have a retail storefront, do you?
I do not.
Okay.
I work from my house,
okay.
which is a workshop, but that really means it's in my garage.
But on your website, you don't need to tell people that. They just see that you're an Issaquah-based studio designer.
Yeah. The ultimate goal would be to have a retail location. But again, that requires heavy overhead.
Yeah.
And if I can have an online business and not have that, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's perfect. So where did you move 10 minutes east? What town is that you moved to?
So I moved to a town called Falls City.
Oh, yeah. Again, another Falls City, another really remote place in my history of being a Seattleite.
You're going to have to come out and visit one of these days.
It's booming too, right?
Yes. It is an area where people take Sunday drives, and we get a lot of motorcycles and these old hot rod cars that want to, cruise around and make a big loop somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And they drive on our road. And, it's a lot of agriculture. Mm-hmm. And it really is about people who perhaps want the luxuries of living close to a big city, but they want a slower paced life. And they want, they want a little extra space around. A little more land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we got.
Wow.
We were super lucky. And as soon as we saw this property, I thought, oh yeah, I can totally envision, a bride driving up to my place and getting excited, not only about where they're driving to, but, just that whole experience mm-hmm. of, where those flowers were created.
So are you going to be able to have a space that you could have consult with brides at and have invite people out to?
The ultimate goal is for us to build a large barn, and part of that barn will be my workshop.
First and Bloom's headquarters.
Yes, and I want people to be able to come out and experience that. And
I can imagine it. It's so bucolic out there.
Yeah, it has such a long driveway that we had to get a lawnmower to take the garbage cans out to the main street. And I'm not exaggerating when I say a long driveway. So it really is kind of, you meander through the woods and to get to this meadow, and it's really pretty.
Yeah, you just need time and more plants, and you can landscape the whole, the whole place.
Oh, gosh, yes. After visiting some of the farmers this past week, I'm like, oh gosh, that just delves into a whole nother avenue of this industry, which...
The farmer florist category?
Yes, I'm not... That's to be determined. Ask me about that in a year, and maybe I'll have a different answer.
So you alluded to visiting farmers, and you had told me a couple weeks ago by email that this was sort of your summer of farm visits.
Yes.
Every florist should do this. So how did you set this up?
It was pretty easy. Like, I talked to the gals down at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market, and I said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing a farm tour, and I, you know, who would you recommend? And every person that I contacted, I got a response from, and they, you know, welcomed me to come out to their place.
And wow. And these are all member, people who grow their, who sell their flowers at the Seattle Wholesale Growers Market.
Correct. And I, it, you know, it, for me, it's a method of promoting my brand, distinguishing myself, but it, ultimately, I was the one that was educated.
Right.
And that's what really came out of it, is the education, the knowledge that I gained from, you know, taking a day to go see what these people do, and then really just appreciating the level of work and dedication that goes into the flowers that, you know, sit on our dining room tables.
Right. I love that, because now you have this ability to have this extra product knowledge. If someone, I mean, I don't know if you encounter this, but this whole, just the price resistance that people have about flower, you know, thinking flowers should be cheap because they're perishable. I feel like if more consumers understood the hardworking flower farmers of the U.S. And what they had to go through just to live off their land, they maybe would not begrudge that extra 50 cents a stem or whatever.
Yeah.
So you can probably talk more knowledgeably about that.
Well, I think, you know, one of the farmers put it in a really direct and obvious way that I hadn't thought about. That was a big jet.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, in our society, we have no problem spending a few extra dollars for a really great cup of coffee, especially in this area.
Exactly.
And when you think about it, it really is an expensive cup of coffee. And I do it every single day.
Yeah, we've got our cups right here.
Why wouldn't we pay a few extra dollars for something that, you know, was responsible and sustainable and promotes, you know, our friends and neighbors? And maybe you don't know the person who's growing these flowers, but they really are your neighbor, and stimulating your own economy.
Right.
So, and it's just gorgeous. Like, you're just not going to get anything as beautiful as these flowers. I just don't see it.
Yeah.
They're too beautiful.
Yeah. There's a cool quote that I put in the conclusion of the Slow Flowers book that I found, I think through my friend Casey Cronquist at the Cut Flower Commission in California, but it was research that had been done by the American Farmers and Ranchers Association or something like that, and they had done a survey of people's attitudes about farmland, and the conclusion was that like a huge percentage of people felt that they knew the farmer or the rancher by virtue of just driving past their land in a community, and that made me feel so pleased that there is this sort of change in our mindset in America. Maybe we're not at all connected to agribusiness, but the local farmer we're totally kind of proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And so your flowers are basically a symbol of that for your customers.
Yeah, and I think you know, we've had this extremely hot weather for how many weeks now?
The driest June on record something?
Yeah. And it was probably a really great thing that the weather was that hot, because the moment that I stepped out of the car, I thought, oh my gosh, I don't do this every day. And, you know, I got a sunburn. I was sweating.
Yeah, your shoulders are peeling.
I know. I was sweating, you know, immediately. And I thought, do this every day. And, and you know, I only see the, I really only see the finished product.
You see the pretty part.
Yeah, I do see the pretty part. I don't see the sweat and the dirt and the, you know, everything that goes into that. And the getting up at 3:30 in the morning because
it's cooler.
It's cooler. Yeah. And then staying up until 1 o'clock at night because it's just, that's how dedicated they are.
Yeah.
And not only seeing them and where they live, but but seeing their families and, you know, seeing the kids hanging out and, you know, the, you know, it's a family effort. It's not just one, some of them, it's not just one person. It's the whole family and that is their life.
So you're ultimately going to, are you going to blog about the farms?
Yep.
Or, okay, so, good. So people can read these stories in on your website.
Yep. So on my blog, This Country Life, which can be found at my website.
I love it.
They, you know, the site isn't strictly limited to, you know, flowers and my business, but it's really about the life, you know, that has evolved me to where I am now. So you're
And now you're in the country, so you're going to be telling about that too.
You get tidbits of, you know, something that happened with my son and, you know, my husband, you know, out at our place and, you know, stories about my past because I did come from a farming community in Eastern Washington. So even though I didn't live that big farm lifestyle, I do have, you know, a pretty darn good idea. And I was an only child and my dad made me work really hard. And so I get some of that. I get it.
And, oh, how fun. That's really great.
But yes, there will be, for every visit that I do, I've done 5 so far.
Wow, Tammy, that's great.
I plan to travel to Walla Walla to see the orchid farm. And so there's a few other places that I still need to hit. Dan's Dahlias. They're coming up. We have to time them, right, based on, you know, seasonality of these flowers.
You're not going to Dan's Dahlias until his fields are filled with dahlias.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that'll blow your mind.
I know. I'm super excited about that. But I'll be, you know, talking about each of the different farms. And when I went into it, you know, I probably should have, most people would say, oh, well, what's your game plan going into this? But I really let each of them evolve. And I was concerned that, oh, they're not going to evolve. But every single stop that I made evolved.
Into
a story and into a different perspective. And so, you know, I hope that people will stay tuned for that and to hear, you know, the experience that I had.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, I wanted to talk just a little bit about something I've had on my mind in getting to know you, and that's this, because we encountered this with the Slow Flowers website, that if people don't know you're in Issaquah, and they're just searching by Greater Seattle, you may not be popping up at the top of the list because you are, you know, in the outer circles of Seattle.
Yes.
So this, you know, we're trying to play with that, but are you finding that you have to market yourself as East Side, or like, how are you finding the customers, or how are the customers finding you beyond the obvious somebody in the, within a 50-mile radius of Seattle? Because they probably wouldn't find you if that was the search.
That's a really good question. It's a constant battle because of online search in general.
And you're familiar with this because of your background in corporate America.
Yes,
okay.
in digital media. And I think part of it, well, one, you have to connect yourself with other sites like, you know, Offbeat Bride or slowflowers.com. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes.
And then what keywords are you using? Like, are you calling yourself an eco wedding designer, or
I'm probably I'm eco florist, local sustainable florist. Mm-hmm. Those terms.
If someone were to search by those terms and put Issaquah in, they would find you then.
I hope so.
Yeah,
that's a great question and something that I need to research more of. Again, it's almost that aspect of the business is itself, it's a full-time job.
Seriously, I completely agree. I understand the limitations because we've delved into Slow Flowers to figure out what we can do to make searches, you know, be more obvious for you.
Yes,
It's also changes all the time, you know. You know, I hear constantly when Facebook changed their rules or whatever.
Yeah.
So. It sounds like your best marketing is really just word of mouth referrals from happy customers.
Yeah.
And networking.
Yeah, then the, you know, catch the helicopter now. The majority, you know, the majority of my business has been from, you know, getting out there and, you know, building awareness, you know, connecting with the Chamber of Commerce is on my list.
Oh, cool.
Which I need to pursue further. But, you know, just creating that social following and building the content, because that's what gains the credibility within the search engines that will drive more searches towards my site.
So and having that blog is really going to be an investment.
Yeah. It is key. The images, you know, the Instagram and the Facebook.
Cool. Well, I'm very excited to see these blogs and to see our favorite farmers showcased. And,
yes, of course.
You know, the connection of going that extra step is something that is a priority. I don't think everyone's doing that. So a lot of people know the farmers because they meet them here at the market. But going out to see their farm and sort of highlighting that is, it took your time for you. It obviously took time for them. But it's going to ultimately get more flowers into the hands of more consumers. And so that's going to benefit everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, this is a business. But at the end of the day, it's really, I want to build that awareness. And, you know, if I can convert just a couple people to be like, you know, in the grocery store, oh, did you see that sticker? You know, yeah, let's choose that one over, you know, this bunch of flowers. That's a win.
Yep.
And the more that that happens, that is ultimately going to help us in the end. So, you know, as American flower
promoters.
Yeah, that's the word. We're not growers, florists, but
I've been playing around with a new word called floristas. We're just all floristas. I don't know. It may not stick, but thank you so much, Tammy. I love this conversation and I can't wait to come out to Fall City to see that barn when you build it.
Oh gosh, yes.
A couple years from now, probably.
Yeah, you might have to look at the empty plot of land that sits there for a little bit. But you can
hologram.
Envision it. I'll give you a picture. You can envision it. And anyway, hopefully sooner than later.
Oh, that's great. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
As she mentions in our conversation, Tammy recently launched a blog called This Country Life. This is where she will share stories about her family's recent move to a 5-acre farm in bucolic Fall City, Washington. As she writes, hopefully you've already sensed that First in Bloom is more than just about selling flowers. It's about finding what truly matters in life. It's about flowers that help you get through the good times and bad. It's about family and how we all grow together. And probably the biggest revelation is about returning to your roots no matter how far away you thought you would be and being okay with it. I love that sentiment. Thanks again for joining me for another wonderful interview today. Listeners like you have downloaded this podcast more than 55,000 times. Thank you to each and every one for downloading, listening, commenting, and sharing. It means so much. Until next week, you're invited to join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. And if you like what you hear, please consider logging on to iTunes and posting a listener review. The content and opinions expressed here are either mine alone or those of my guests alone, independent of any podcast sponsor or other person, company, or organization. The Slow Flowers podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holtgertz. Learn more about their work at shellandtree.com.